You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we talk with the lawyer who's representing a Syrian refugee living in Wisconsin who's challenging President Trump's travel and refugee ban.
First, this weekend marks the 20th annual Great Backyard Bird Count. The information collected helps the National Audubon Society and the Cornell Lab of Ornithology assess how bird populations are doing and what changes to their habitats might mean for long-term survival and success. Last year, over 160,000 birders of all ages and skill levels participated and then submitted their observations online.
Ryan Brady is a research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR and bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. Ryan, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be here.
Why do a bird count at this time of year here in February?
Well, we don't have as many birds as we have at other times of year, but we still have some birds that we want to keep track of, understand how many are out there, how they're distributed across the landscape, and how those numbers might be changing both year to year and over longer periods of time. Like you said in the intro, this is the 20th year of the survey, so we can get a good picture on how those populations might be trending. So it's a good opportunity to maybe beat the doldrums of winter and get a snapshot over this four-day period of what those bird populations are doing at a time when, frankly, we don't have a lot of other really great data on the bird populations from the mid to late winter period.
What kind of things have we learned from this in years past?
Well, in years past, you can see how certain birds might be trending in a certain direction. For example, some might be moving northward as we've had some of these warmer winters in recent years, and also due to bird feeders becoming more dominant at the northern edge of some of the birds' range. So a good example of this is the northern cardinal. Cardinals' populations have been drifting northward, particularly through Wisconsin, now can be found all the way up on the Lake Superior. You also see year-to-year changes in food availability. So there's certain birds that only really move if the foods that they eat are not available in that given year. And so if there's a particular seed crop like spruce or fir that isn't produced in a given year, a bird like a red-breasted nuthatch or a crossbill or an evening grosbeak might have to move farther away to go find additional foods. And so we can see these sorts of trends and movements by taking these snapshots through such a powerful and robust citizen science program like the Great Backyard Bird Count.
Yeah, a lot of people participating in this. And so what do groups like the National Audubon Society and the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, what did they use this data for once all of this data is submitted?
Well, some of the things that we've touched on are, you know, really about tracking the migration patterns for a lot of these birds, maybe understanding how they're shifting in terms of their movements, maybe how things like disease, West Nile virus, or in some cases in some parts of the world, even avian influenza, might be affecting the way birds are responding to those environmental changes, how they shift and so forth. So there's a lot of different utilities, especially, like I said, when you build that data set up over a long period of time. That gives you a lot of power to see what might just be a blip on the radar versus something that's an actual trend.
I want to ask how people can sign up and get involved with this, Ryan. Let's narrow this down a little. Even if it's somebody like me who can identify a bird as, you know, being something other than a tree, you know, I know it's a bird. I have a hard time telling one kind of bird from another. Can even people such as me help out, and if so, how?
Yeah, the beauty of the Great Backyard Bird Count is its simplicity. You can do it anywhere, anytime during that four-day period, and you don't have to know all the birds you see. You just have to know, frankly, you just need to know one. But most people know a handful of the more common ones and so forth. And you just have to spend at least 15 minutes. That's all I ask, is you spend at least 15 minutes at that location tallying what birds you saw and how many of them. And if you can't get an actual count, then an estimate works too. And then you go and enter them online. And it's even broadened. The name suggests the Great Backyard Bird Count. That's how it started, was the idea of looking at your backyard feeders and kind of harnessing all those observations that folks are making, because so many people love watching birds. But it's really expanded. It's not just your backyard. You can do it when you're on the road. You can do it at a local park. You could do it at a National Wildlife Refuge. Wherever you are, you can do it.
We're talking with Ryan Brady. He's a research scientist for Wisconsin DNR and bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. We're talking about the Great Backyard Bird Count. So, Ryan, what types of bird species might we see during this count?
Well, a lot of folks do it from their backyard, so a lot of those backyard bird species are ones that are commonly reported. And so if you look at the top 10 number of birds on the scale of North America, not just Wisconsin, we're talking about dark-eyed juncos, northern cardinals, mourning doves, downy woodpeckers, blue jays, goldfinches, black-capped chickadees, American crows. So those things you're used to seeing out your window, they're fairly common on the landscape, and a lot of folks can identify them. But then farther afield, you can see all kinds of interesting birds, snowy owls, golden eagles, maybe some sort of rare gull like the one seen in Milwaukee recently, the slaty-backed gull. So there's a whole variety of species you can find, maybe anywhere from 125 to 150 species get reported in Wisconsin during the course of this four-day period. And some of them are going to be readily seen in your backyard, and others you're going to have to go out and maybe dig around, and that's half the fun of birding.
You mentioned a kind of chickadee. We have a little audio of that. Here's a listen. Oh, see, even I know that's a chickadee. Okay, I feel better about myself now. Now, speaking of sound, do we have to actually, Ryan, lay eyes on the bird, or if we hear the bird, can we count it as part of our backyard bird count?
Even if you hear it, if you can readily identify it with certainty, then in the birding and bird monitoring world, that counts as a detection, and so you could enter that. And so chickadees right now, a lot of them are doing their calls, the chickadee-dee-dee, but some of them are starting to sing that two-note CD song that you played there. And that's kind of a sign of the season where the day length is getting longer. That's triggering that bird to think about breeding and nesting season. And they're starting to advertise their territories and to prospective mates. And so they're starting to sing that song. So that's in a lot of birders' worlds, the chickadee switching over to that song is a pleasant sign of spring to come.
Mm. And speaking of spring to come, it seems kind of interesting that creatures as delicate as small birds can survive a Wisconsin winter. How do they cope with cold temperatures and then the storms and less access to food and water?
Well, some of them have certain behavioral modifications, like they might roost in cavities. So bluebirds might spend their time in the winter in southern Wisconsin, not many of them, but some of them roosting in cavities in groups together, kind of all huddled up. Many species will roost in conifer or evergreen trees where it provides a little warmer temperature. It's a little bit of a buffer. Some of them undergo more physiological changes, literally. Chickadees will lower their body temperature during the wintertime at night to be able to cope. Some of them will eat more to make up for that demand. So there's a variety of adaptations that some birds have figured out that allow them to stick around and enjoy our winters.
And Ryan, I've got to ask, last time I think you were on the show, you introduced me to the bird, the parasitic jaeger, which gets its food by knocking food out of other birds' beaks, as I understand. I've been fascinated with the parasitic jaeger. Is this too soon to start seeing them? And if so, when can we expect them back in northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say you're not going to find one on the Great Backyard Bird Count, Rob. You're going to have to wait until May because it's May when those birds start moving north again. That's a bird that nests in the Arctic tundra. And so it is spending its winters out in the oceans, chasing birds and making them regurgitate out there, and then it's going to move back north come May and nest up in the Arctic, and then we'll have a chance to see it again on its way south again in September.
All right, I still want to advance the hashtag parasitic Jaeger. Ryan, thanks again for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ryan Brady, research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR, bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Institute. He joined us to talk about the Great Backyard Bird Count, which is going on this weekend. You can get information on how you can participate over on the Central Time Facebook page. Kate, are you pretty good at spotting, distinguishing birds from one another?
I can spot, perhaps not too readily distinguished.
I know some, like a crow. I know a crow.
I know
red-tailed
hawk,
robin, cardinal.
It's a start.
The basics I can do. The finer points I have trouble with. Well, again, whether you're good at this or not, find more information on the bird count. You can get that on the Central Time Facebook page.